talking, but the fire showed only silent images.
You see, he's all right, thanks to Dustfinger.
Farid stared into the fire with longing, as if that could take him back to Dustfinger's side. Then he heaved a sigh and blew gently on the flames until they turned dark red, as if blushing at the pet names he soothed them with.
Will you follow him?
Farid shook his head.
Dustfinger wants me to look after Roxanne.
Maggie could sense his bitterness for herself.
What will you do?
He looked at her with the question in his eyes.
What am I supposed to do?
Whisper words. That's all I can do, she added in her mind. All the words the minstrels sing about the blue jay, how he calms the waves with his voice, how he is invulnerable and fast as the wind, how the fairies protect him, and the white women watch over his sleep. Words. They were the only means she had of protecting Mo, and she whispered them day and night, in every private moment, sending them after him like the crows that the Black Prince had sent to Umbra. The flames had gone out, and Farid was heaping up the warm ashes with his hands, when a shadow fell on him. Doria stood behind them, holding hands with two children.
Maggie, the woman with the loud voice is looking for you.
The robbers had many names for Eleanor. Maggie couldn't help smiling, but Farid cast a none too friendly glance at Doria. He carefully put the ashes back in his bag and rose to his feet.
I'll be with Roxanne, he said,
kissing Maggie on the mouth. He hadn't done that for weeks.
Then he pushed past Doria and strode away without looking back once.
He kissed her,
one of the children whispered to Doria, just loud enough for Maggie to hear. The child was a girl, and she blushed when Maggie returned her gaze and hastily hid her face in Doria's side.
So he did, Doria whispered back. But did she kiss him back?
No, said the boy on his right, sizing up Maggie, as if wondering whether kissing her would be fun.
That's a good thing, then, said Doria. A very good thing.
Chapter 42. An Audience with the Adderhead. Just after midnight, the Adderhead's retinue reached Umbra. Orpheus had made Os wait under the gallows by the city gate for 3 nights on end, so that he would be sure to hear of the Silver Prince's arrival as soon as the milksop did. All was ready. The piper had every door and window in the castle draped with black cloth, so that it would be night there for his master even during the day, and the felled trees that the milksop intended to burn on the castle hearths lay ready in the courtyard, although everyone knew that no fire could drive away the cold that had made its way into the Adderhead's flesh and bones. The one man who could perhaps have done it had escaped from the castle dungeons, and all Umbra wondered how the Silver Prince would take that news. Orpheus sent Os to the castle that very night. After all, it was common knowledge that the Adderhead hardly slept at all.
Say I have information of the utmost importance for him. Say it's about the bookbinder and his daughter.
Having little confidence in his bodyguard's intellectual capacities, he repeated the words half a dozen times, but Os did his errand well. After just over 3 hours, hours spent by Orpheus pacing restlessly up and down his study, Os came back with the message that the audience was granted, but only on condition Orpheus went to the castle at once, since the Adderhead must rest before he set out again.
Set out again? Aha! So he's playing his daughter's game, Orpheus thought, as he hurried up the path to the castle. Very well. Then it's up to you to show him he can't win the game without your help.
Involuntarily, he licked his lips to keep them smooth for this great task. Never before had he spun his web around such magnificent prey.
Curtain up, he whispered to himself again and again. Curtain up.
The servant who led him through the black-draped corridors to the throne room said not a single word. It was hot and dark in the castle. Like hell, thought Orpheus. And wasn't that appropriate? Didn't people often compare the Adderhead to the devil himself?
You had to hand it to Fenolio. This was a villain of real stature. Beside the Adderhead, Capricorn had been just a cheap play actor, an amateur, although no doubt Mortola saw it differently. But who cared what Mortola thought now? A shudder of delight ran down Orpheus's plump shoulders. The Adderhead, sprung from a clan that had cultivated the art of evil for generations. There was no cruel act that at least one of his ancestors hadn't committed. Cunning, the lust for power, a total lack of conscience. Those were the family's outstanding characteristics. What a combination! Orpheus was excited. His hands were damp and sweating like a boy's on his first date. Again and again he ran his tongue over his teeth, as if to sharpen them, prepare them for the right words. "Believe me," he heard himself saying, "I can lay this world at your feet. I can make it into anything you like. But for that, you must find me a certain book. It is even more powerful than the book that made you immortal. Far more powerful." Inkheart. Nope, he wasn't going to think of the night he had lost it. Not now. And he certainly wasn't going to think of Dustfinger. It was no lighter in the throne room than in the corridors. A few lost-looking candles burned among the columns and around the throne. On Orpheus's last visit, as far as he could remember, that was when he had delivered the dwarf to the milksop, the way to the throne had been lined by stuffed animals, bears, wolves, spotted great cats, and of course the unicorn he had ridden here. But they were all gone now. Even the milksop was bright enough to realize that in view of the sparse taxes he had sent to his brother-in-law, these hunting trophies were unlikely to impress the Adderhead. Nothing but darkness filled the great hall now, making the black-clad guards between the columns almost invisible. Only their weapons glinted in the flickering light of the fire that burned behind the throne. Orpheus went to great pains to stride past them, looking unimpressed. But unfortunately, he stumbled over the hem of his coat twice. And when he finally stood in front of the throne itself, the milksop was sitting there, and not his brother-in-law. Orpheus felt a stab of disappointment, sharp as a knife. He quickly bowed his head to hide it, and tried to find the right things to say, flattering but not too servile. Talking to the powerful called for special skills, but he'd had practice. There had always been people more powerful than he was in his life. His father had been the first, never satisfied with his awkward son, who liked books better than working in his parents' shop. Those endless hours among the dusty shelves, an ever-friendly smile when he had to serve the tourists who flocked in, instead of leafing through a book with hasty fingers, avidly looking for the place where he had last had to leave the world of print. Orpheus couldn't count the slaps he'd earned over his forbidden passion for reading. One every tenth page was probably about it. But the price had never seemed too high. What was a slap for 10 pages of escapism? 10 pages far from everything that made him unhappy. 10 pages of real life, instead of the monotony that other people called the real world. "Your Grace." Orpheus bent his head even lower. What a ridiculous sight the milksop was under his silver-powdered wig, his scrawny neck emerging so pathetically from his heavy velvet collar. His pale face was as expressionless as ever, as if his creator had forgotten to give it eyebrows, just sketching in the eyes and lips lightly.
"You want to speak to the Adderhead?"
Even the milksop's voice was not impressive. Malicious tongues mocked it, saying he wouldn't have to change it very much to use it as a decoy call to the ducks he liked shooting out of the sky. How that feeble fool is sweating, thought Orpheus, as he smiled deferentially. Well, I suppose I'd be sweating too in his place. The Adderhead had come to Umbra to kill his worst enemy, only to discover instead that his herald and his brother-in-law had let their valuable prisoner get away. Really, it was amazing that they were both still alive. "Yes, Your Honor, whenever it is convenient for the Silver Prince." Orpheus was delighted to realize that in this empty hall, his voice sounded even more effective than usual. "I have information for him that could be of the greatest significance."
About his daughter and the blue jay?
The milksop plucked at his sleeves with a deliberately bored expression. Perfumed bonehead.
Indeed. Orpheus cleared his throat. As you know, I have important clients, influential friends. News comes to my ears that doesn't even reach castles. This time, it is alarming news, and I want to make sure that your brother-in-law hears of it.
And what might this news be?
Careful, Orpheus. As to that, Your Grace, he really was taking great pains to sound regretful. I would rather tell it only to the Adderhead himself. After all, it concerns his daughter.
Whom he will hardly feel like discussing at present.
The milksop adjusted his wig.
Sly, ugly creature, he uttered. Abducts my prisoner to steal the throne of Umbra from me. Threatens to kill him if her own father doesn't follow her into the mountains like a dog. As if it hadn't been difficult enough to catch that puffed-up blue jay. But why do I bother to tell you all this? I suppose because you brought me the unicorn. The best hunt of my life.
In a melancholy mood, he stared at Orpheus with eyes almost as pale as his face.
The more beautiful the game, the greater the pleasure of killing it, don't you agree?
Words of wisdom, Your Highness. Words of wisdom. Orpheus bowed again. The milksop loved people to bow to him. Glancing nervously at the guards, he now leaned down to Orpheus.
I would so much like another unicorn, he whispered. It was a huge success with all my friends. Do you think you can get me another? Maybe a little larger than the last one?
Orpheus gave the milksop a confident smile. What a talkative, empty-headed fool he was. But then, every story needed such characters. They usually died quite early on. It was to be hoped that this general rule held good for the Adderhead's brother-in-law.
Naturally, Your Highness, that ought not to be any problem, murmured Orpheus, choosing every word with care, even though this princely fool wasn't worth the trouble.
But first I must speak to the Silver Prince. Rest assured that my information really is of the utmost importance. And you, he added, giving the milksop a crafty smile, will receive the throne of Umbra. Get me an audience with your immortal brother-in-law, and the Blue Jay will meet his well-deserved end at last. Violante will be punished for her deceitfulness, and for your triumphal celebrations, I'll get you a Pegasus, which will surely impress your friends even more than the unicorn. You could hunt it with both crossbows and hawks. The milksop's pale eyes widened with delight.
A Pegasus, he breathed,
as he impatiently waved over one of the guards.
Fabulous indeed. I'll get you your audience, but let me advise you.
And here he lowered his voice to a whisper.
Not to go too close to my brother-in-law. The stink coming off him has already killed two of my dogs.
The Adderhead kept Orpheus waiting another hour. It passed as painfully slowly as few hours had before in his whole life. The milksop asked him about other creatures that might be hunted, and Orpheus promised basilisks and six-legged lions, while his mind put the right words together for the Silver Prince. Every one of them must ring true. After all, the Lord of the Castle of Night was as famous for his clever mind as for his cruelty. Orpheus had done a great deal of thinking since Mortola visited him, and he always came to the same conclusion. He could make his dreams of wealth and influence come true only at the Adderhead's side. Even in a state of physical decay, the Silver Prince still played the leading part here. With his help, Orpheus might perhaps get back the book that had made this world such a wonderful toy before Dustfinger stole it. Not to mention the other book, the one enabling its owner to play with that toy for all eternity. How modest you are, Orpheus, he had whispered to himself when the idea first took shape in his mind. Two books, that's all you ask, just two books, and one of them full of blank pages and in rather poor condition. Ah,
what a life he could lead. Orpheus the all-powerful, Orpheus the immortal, hero of the world he had loved even as a child.
"He's coming, bow low."
The milksop jumped up so hastily that his wig slipped down over his receding forehead, and Orpheus came out of his delightful daydreams with a start. A reader doesn't really see the characters in the story. He feels them. Orpheus had discovered that for the first time when, aged nearly 11, he had tried describing or drawing characters from his favourite books. As the Adderhead came toward him out of the darkness, it was exactly like the day when he first encountered him in Fenolio's book. He felt fear and admiration. He sensed the evil that surrounded the Silver Prince like black light, and an abundance of power that made it difficult to breathe. But Orpheus had imagined the Silver Prince very much taller. And of course, Fenolio's description had said nothing about that devastated face, the pale and puffy flesh, the swollen hands. Every step the Adderhead took seemed to hurt him. His eyes were bloodshot under their heavy lids. They watered even in the sparse candlelight, and the stench given off by his bloated body made Orpheus want desperately to cover his own mouth and nose. The Adderhead didn't deign to look at him as he walked past, breathing heavily. Only when he was sitting on the throne did those reddened eyes turn to his visitor. A lizard's eyes, so Fenolio had described them. Now they were inflamed slits under swollen lids, and the red jewels that the Adderhead wore in both nostrils were sunk deep, like nails driven into the white flesh.
"You want to tell me something about my daughter and the blue jay?"
He struggled for breath after every word, but that made his voice no less menacing.
"What is it? That Violante loves power as much as I do, so she's stolen it from me. Is that what you want to tell me? If so, then say goodbye to your tongue, because I'll have it torn out. I greatly dislike having my time wasted, however much of it I now have at my disposal."
His tongue torn out. Orpheus gulped. Not a nice idea at all. But he still had it at the moment, even if the stench wafting down from the throne made speaking almost impossible.
"My tongue could come in very useful to you, Your Grace," he replied, with difficulty suppressing an urge to retch. "But of course you're free to tear it out at any time."
The Adderhead's mouth twisted into an unpleasant smile. Pain carved fine lines around his lips.
"What a delightful offer. I see you take me seriously. Very well. What do you have to say?"
"Curtain up, Orpheus," he thought. "On you go. This is your big scene."
"Your daughter, Violante,"
Orpheus let the name die away for effect before he went on, "wants more than just the throne of Umbra. She wants yours, too, which is why she is planning to kill you." The milksop clutched his chest, as if giving the lie to those who claimed that he had a dead partridge there instead of a heart. However, the Adderhead merely stared at Orpheus with his inflamed eyes.
"Your tongue is in great danger," he said. "Violante can't kill me. Have you forgotten that? No one can."
Orpheus felt the sweat running down his nose. The fire behind the Adderhead crackled as if it were calling Dustfinger. Oh, devil take it, he was so frightened. But then wasn't he always frightened? Look him straight in the eye, Orpheus, and trust your voice. Those eyes were terrible. They stripped the skin from his face, and the swollen fingers lay on the arms of the throne like dead flesh. Oh, yes, she can. If the Blue Jay has told her the three words. His voice really did sound astonishingly composed. Good, Orpheus, very good.
"Ah, those three words. So you've heard about them, too. Well, you are right. She could get them out of him under torture. Although, I would expect him to say nothing for a very long time. And he could always give her the wrong words.
Your daughter doesn't have to torture the Blue Jay. She's in league with him.
Yes.
Orpheus saw, from the disfigured face, that such an idea really hadn't occurred to the Silver Prince yet. Ah, this game was fun. This was just the part he wanted to play. They'd soon all be sticking to his cunning tongue like flies on flypaper. The Adderhead remained silent for an agonizingly long time.
Interesting, he said at last. Violante's mother had a weakness for strolling players. I'm sure a robber would have taken her fancy just as much. But Violante is not like her mother. She's like me, although she doesn't care to hear people say so.
Oh, I have no doubt of that, Your Highness. Orpheus injected just enough deference into his voice. But why has the illuminator who works in this castle had to do nothing but illustrate songs about the Blue Jay for over a year? Your daughter has sold her jewels to pay for paints. She's obsessed by that robber. He dominates her mind. Ask Balbulus. Ask him how often she sits in the library staring at the pictures he's painted of the man. And ask yourself, how is it possible for the Blue Jay to have escaped from this castle twice in the last few weeks?
I can't ask Balbulus anything.
The Adderhead's voice seemed made for this black-draped hall.
The Piper is having him hunted out of town at this very moment. He cut off his right hand first.
That really did silence Orpheus for a moment. His right hand. Instinctively, he touched his own writing hand.
Why, if I may ask, Your Highness, why did he do that?
He managed in a thread of a voice.
Why? Because my daughter thought highly of his art, and I hope the stump of his wrist will make it clear to her how very angry I am. For Balbulus will, of course, take refuge with her. Where else would he go?
Indeed. How clever of you.
Orpheus involuntarily moved his fingers, as if to reassure himself that they were still there. He had run out of words. His brain was a blank sheet of paper, and his tongue a dried-up pen.
Shall I let you in on a secret?
The Adderhead licked his cracked lips.
I like what my daughter has done. I can't allow it, but it pleases me. She doesn't care for being ordered around. Neither the Piper nor my pheasant-murdering brother-in-law,
here he cast a look of disgust at the milksop,
has realized that. As for the Blue Jay, it may well be that Violante is only pretending to him that she will protect him. She is wily. She knows as well as I do that it's easy to trick heroes. You just have to make a hero believe you're on the side of what's right and just, and he'll go trotting after you like a lamb to the slaughter. But in the end, Violante will sell me her noble robber for the crown of Umbra, and who knows? Perhaps I really will let her have it.
The milksop was looking straight ahead, as fixedly as if he hadn't heard those last words spoken by his overlord and brother-in-law. However, the Adderhead leaned back and patted his bloated thighs.
I think your tongue is mine, Four Eyes, he said. Any last words before you're left as mute as a fish?
The milksop smiled unpleasantly, and Orpheus's lips began to tremble, as if they already felt the pincers. No, no, this couldn't be happening. He hadn't found his way into this story just to end up a mute beggar in the streets of Umbra. He gave the Adderhead what he hoped was an enigmatic smile, and clasped his hands behind his back. Orpheus knew that this posture made him look rather imposing. He had rehearsed it often enough in front of the mirror. But now he needed words. Words that would cast ripples in this story
circling outward like stones thrown into still water. He lowered his voice as he began to speak again. A word weighs more heavily if it is softly uttered. Very well. Then these are my last words, Your Highness. But rest assured that they will also be the last words you remember when the white women come for you. I swear to you, by my tongue, that your daughter plans to kill you. She hates you, and you underestimate her romantic weakness for the Blue Jay. She wants the throne for him and for herself. That's the only reason why she freed him. Robbers and princes' daughters have always been a dangerous mixture. The words grew in the dark hall as if they had a shadow, and the Adderhead's hooded gaze rested on Orpheus as if to poison him with its own evil.
But that's ridiculous!
The milksop's voice made him sound like an injured child.
Violante is little more than a girl, and an ugly one at that. She'd never dare turn against you.
Of course she would.
For the first time, the Adderhead's voice rose, and the milksop compressed his narrow lips in alarm.
Violante is fearless, unlike my other daughters. Ugly, but fearless, and very cunning, like this man.
Once again, his eyes, clouded with pain, turned to Orpheus.
You're a viper like me, am I right? Poison runs in our veins, not blood. It consumes us too, but it is deadly only to others. It also runs in Violante's veins, so she will betray the Blue Jay, whatever else she may intend at the moment.
The Adderhead laughed, but it turned into a cough. He struggled for breath, gasping as if water were filling his lungs. But when the milksop bent over him in concern, he pushed him roughly away.
What do you want?
He spat at his brother-in-law.
I'm immortal, remember?
And he laughed again, a wheezing, gasping laugh. Then the lizard eyes moved back to Orpheus.
I like you, milk-faced viper. You seem much more like a member of my family than that fellow.
With an impatient gesture, he thrust the milksop aside.
But he has a beautiful sister, so one has to take the brother on with her. Do you have a sister as well? Or can you be of use to me in some other way?
This is going well, thought Orpheus. Very well indeed. Now I'll soon be weaving my own thread through the fabric of this story. And what color will I choose? Gold? Black? Maybe blood red? Oh, he said, casting a weary glance at his fingernails. Another effective trick, as the mirror had shown him. I can be useful to you in many ways. Ask your brother-in-law. I make dreams come true. I tailor things to your own wishes. Careful, Orpheus. You don't have the book back yet. What are you promising?
Oh, a magician, are you?
The contempt in the Adderhead's voice was a warning. No, I wouldn't call it that. Orpheus was quick to reply. Let's just say my art is black. As black as ink. Ink. Of course, Orpheus, he told himself. Why hadn't he thought of that before? Dustfinger had stolen his favorite book from him, it was true. But Fenolio had written others. Why wouldn't the old man's words still work even if they didn't come from Inkheart? Where were the Blue Jay songs that Violante was said to have collected so carefully? Didn't people say she'd ordered Balbulus to fill several books with them?
Black. A color I like.
The Adderhead, groaning, heaved himself out of his throne.
Brother-in-law, give the little viper a horse. I'll take him with me. It's a long way to the castle in the lake, and perhaps he'll help me to pass the time.
Orpheus bowed so deeply that he almost toppled over.
What an honor, he stammered. You always had to give powerful people the feeling that you could hardly speak in their presence. But in that case, might I most humbly ask your highness a favor?
The milksop cast him a distrustful glance. What if that fool had bartered Balbulus's books of Fenolio's songs for a few casks of wine? He'd read him an attack of the plague.
I am a great lover of the art of book illumination, Orpheus went on, without taking his eyes off the milksop. And I've heard wonderful things about the library in this castle. I'd very much like to see the books, and perhaps take one or two on the journey. Who knows, I may even be able to entertain you with their contents on the way.
Indifferently, the Adderhead shrugged his shoulders.
Why not? If you'll work out while you're at it how much silver those that my brother-in-law hasn't yet exchanged for wine are worth.
The milksop bent his head, but Orpheus had seen the vicious dislike in his eyes.
Of course.
Orpheus bowed as low as he could. The Adderhead came down the steps of the throne and stopped in front of him, breathing heavily.
When making your estimate, you should take into account the fact that books illuminated by Balbulus have risen in value, he remarked. After all, he won't be producing any new works without his hand, and that certainly makes those already in existence more valuable. Don't you agree?
Once again, Orpheus found it hard not to retch as the Adderhead's foul breath met his face, but all the same he managed to produce an admiring smile.
How extremely clever of you, Your Highness, he replied. The perfect penalty. May I ask what punishment you intend for the Blue Jay? Perhaps it would be appropriate to separate him from his tongue first, since everyone goes into such raptures about his voice.
But the Adderhead shook his head.
No, no, I have better plans for the Blue Jay. I'm going to flay him alive and make his skin into parchment. And we want him to be able to scream as it's done to him, don't we?
Of course, breathed Orpheus. What a truly fitting punishment for a bookbinder. May I suggest that you write a warning to your enemies on this very special parchment, and have it hung up in marketplaces. I will happily provide you with suitable words. In my trade, one must be able to use words with skill.
Well, well, you're obviously a man of many talents.
The Adderhead was examining him with something like amusement. Now, Orpheus, he told himself, even if you do find Fenolio's songs in the library, there's no substitute for that one book. Tell him about Inkheart.
I assure you, all my talents are at your disposal, Highness, he faltered. But to practice my arts to perfection, I need something that was stolen from me.
Indeed. And what might that be?
A book, Your Grace. The Fire Dancer has stolen it, but I believe he did it at the request of the Blue Jay, who is certain to know where it is now. So if you were to ask him about it as soon as he is in your power...
A book? Did the Blue Jay bind you a book too, I wonder?
Oh, no, no.
Orpheus waved the mere notion away. He has nothing to do with this book. No bookbinder captured its power inside the covers. It's the words in it that make it powerful.
With those words, Your Grace, this world can be recreated, and every living thing in it made subject to your own purposes.
Indeed. For instance, trees would bear silver fruit. It could be night forever if I wanted.
How he was staring at him, like a snake staring at a mouse. Not a word out of place now, Orpheus.
Oh, yes, Orpheus nodded eagerly. I brought your brother-in-law a unicorn with the aid of that book. And a dwarf.
The Adderhead cast the milksop a derisive glance.
Yes, that sounds like the kind of thing my good brother-in-law would want. My wishes would be rather different.
He scrutinized Orpheus with satisfaction.
Obviously, the Adderhead had realized that the same kind of heart beat in both their breasts. Black with vanity and a desire for vengeance, in love with its own cunning, full of contempt for those whose hearts were ruled by other feelings. Orpheus knew what state his own heart was in, and he feared only that those inflamed eyes might also uncover what he hid even from himself. His envy of the innocence of others, his longing for an unblemished heart.
"What about my rotting flesh?"
The Adderhead passed his swollen fingers over his face.
"Can you cure that too with this book, or do I still need the blue jay to do it?"
Orpheus hesitated.
"Ah, I see. You're not sure."
The Adderhead's mouth twisted, his dark lizard eyes almost lost in his flesh.
"And you're clever enough not to promise what you can't perform. Well, I'll return to your other promises and give you a chance to ask the Blue Jay about the book that was stolen from you."
Orpheus bowed his head. "Thank you, Your Grace. Oh, this was going well. Very well indeed."
"Highness,"
the milksop was hurrying down the steps of the throne. His voice really was like a duck quacking, and Orpheus imagined not a wild boar or his fabulous unicorn being carried through the streets of Umbra as a trophy of the hunt, but the milksop himself, his silver-powdered wig full of blood and dust. However, he'd be a poor sight in comparison with the unicorn. Orpheus exchanged a quick glance with the Adderhead, and for a moment it seemed to him as if they were seeing the same picture.
"You ought to rest now, my prince," said the milksop, with obviously exaggerated concern. "It was a long journey, and another lies ahead of you."
"Rest? How am I supposed to rest when you and the piper have let the man who turned me into a piece of rotting meat escape? My skin is burning, my bones are icy, my eyes feel as if every ray of light pierces them with a pin. I can't rest until that accursed book has stopped poisoning me, and the man who bound it is dead. I picture it to myself every night, brother-in-law. Just ask your sister. Every night I pace up and down, unable to sleep, imagining him wailing and screaming and begging me for a quick death. But I'll have as many torments ready for him as that murderer's book has pages. He'll curse it even more often than I do. And he'll very soon find out that my daughter's skirts are no protection from the Adderhead."
Once again, a racking cough shook him, and for a moment his swollen hands clutched Orpheus by the arm. Their flesh was pale as a dead fish. "It smells like a dead fish too," thought Orpheus. Yet he's still the lord of this story.
"Grandfather!"
The boy emerged from the darkness as suddenly as if he had been standing in the shadows all this time. He had a pile of books in his small arms.
"Jacopo!"
The Adderhead swung around so abruptly that his grandson stood rooted to the ground.
"How often do I have to tell you that even a prince doesn't walk into the throne room unannounced?"
"I was here before the rest of you."
Jacopo raised his chin and pressed the books to his chest, as if they could shield him from his grandfather's anger.
"I often come in here to read, over there, behind my great-great-great-grandfather's statue."
He pointed to the statue of a very fat man standing among the columns.
"In the dark?"
"You could see the pictures the words paint in your head better in the dark. Anyway, Sootbird gave me these."
He put out his hand, showing his grandfather a couple of candles. The Adderhead frowned and bent down to his grandson.
"You will not read in the throne room as long as I'm here. You won't even put your head around the door. You will stay in your own room, or I'll have you shut in with the hounds like Tullio, understand? By the emblem of my house, You look more and more like your father. Can't you at least cut your hair?
Jacopo held the gaze of those reddened eyes for an astonishingly long time. But finally he bowed his head, turned without a word, and stalked away, the books still held in front of him like a shield.
He really is coming to look more like Cosimo all the time, remarked the milksop. But he gets his arrogance from his mother.
No, he gets it from me,
the adderhead told him.
A very useful quality for him when he sits on the throne.
The milksop cast an anxious glance after Jacopo, but the adderhead struck his brother-in-law's chest with his swollen fist.
Summon your men, he ordered him. I have work for you to do.
Work?
Looking ill at ease, the milksop raised his brows. He had dusted them with silver, like his wig.
Yes, for a change, you won't be hunting unicorns. You'll be hunting children. Or do you want to let the Black Prince get away with hiding those brats in the forest, while you and the Piper are busy letting my daughter lead you by the nose like dancing bears?
The milksop twisted his pale mouth, looking injured.
We had to prepare for your arrival, dear brother-in-law, and try to catch the blue jay again.
In which attempt you weren't particularly successful,
the adderhead brusquely interrupted him.
Luckily, my daughter has told us where we can find him. And while I recapture the bird you two so generously allowed to go free, you can bring the children here for me, along with that knife-thrower who calls himself a prince, so that he can watch me skin the jay. I fear his own skin is too black to make parchment, so I'll have to think of something else for him. Fortunately, I am very inventive in such matters. But to be sure, they say the same of you, don't they?
The milksop flushed, obviously flattered, although it was clear that the prospect of hunting children through the forest didn't excite him half as much as a unicorn hunt, perhaps because they were prey that couldn't be eaten.
Good.
The adderhead turned and walked on unsteady legs toward the door of the hall.
Send me Sootbird and the Piper,
he called over his shoulder.
He should be through with chopping off hands by now. And tell the maids that Jacopo will go with me to the castle in the lake. No one spies on his mother better than that child, even though she doesn't especially like him.
The milksop stared at him expressionlessly.
As you please, he murmured in a thin voice.
But the adderhead turned once more as the servants scurried to open the heavy door for him.
As for you, Milkface,
Orpheus couldn't help instinctively giving a start.
I set off at sunset. My brother-in-law will tell you where you must be then. You'll have to bring your own servant and a tent, and make sure you don't bore me. Parchment could always be made of your skin, too.
Your Highness, Orpheus bowed again, although he was feeling weak at the knees. Had he ever played a more dangerous game? But everything will be all right, he told himself. You wait and see, Orpheus. This story is yours. It was written for you alone. No one loves it better. No one understands it better. Certainly not the old fool who wrote it in the first place. The adderhead had been gone for some time, but Orpheus still stood there as if beguiled by the promise of the future.
So, you're a magician. Fancy that.
The milksop was inspecting him as if he were a caterpillar that had turned into a black moth before his eyes.
Is that why the unicorn was so easy to hunt? Because it wasn't real?
Oh, it was real enough, replied Orpheus with a patronizing smile. It was made of the same stuff as you, he added in his mind. This milksop creature really was a pathetic character. As soon as he could make the words come to life again, he'd write a totally ridiculous kind of death for him. Suppose he had him torn to pieces by his own hounds. No,
he'd make it choke to death on a chicken bone at one of his banquets, and then have him fall on his silver-dusted face into a large dish of black pudding. That was it. Orpheus couldn't help smiling.
"That smile will soon be wiped off your face,"
the milksop hissed at him.
"The Adderhead doesn't like having his expectations disappointed."
"Oh, I'm sure you know that better than anyone," replied Orpheus.
"Now kindly show me the library."
Chapter 43. Four Berries.
The marten was worse than the bear. He was watching her. He was chattering her name into the boy's ear. Fortunately, the boy didn't understand him, and chasing her away. But a time came when the marten followed the boy outside, and the bear just raised his heavy head when she hopped up to the bowl of soup that one of the women had put in front of his master. Nothing was easier to poison than soup. The Black Prince was arguing with Snapper once again, and his back was turned as she dropped the dark red berries into the dish. Five tiny berries. That was all it would take to send the Prince of the Robbers to another kingdom, one where his bear wouldn't be able to follow him. But just as she was about to let the fifth berry fall from her beak, the wretched marten shot toward her, as if even outside he had scented what she was planning. The berry rolled away, and Mortola prayed to all the devils in hell that four would be enough to kill. The Black Prince, another high-minded fool. Presumably his heart felt a pang every time he saw a cripple. He'd never help her get hold of the book that would let her bargain with death, not he. But fortunately men like that were less common than white ravens, and most of them died young. Such men didn't want what made other hearts beat faster. Riches, power, fame. No, the Black Prince wasn't interested in any of that. Justice made his heart beat faster. Pity, love. As if life hadn't treated him just as badly as the others. Kicks and blows, pain and hunger. He'd known more than enough of all that. So where did the pity that motivated him come from? And the warmth of his silly heart, the laughter in his face. He simply didn't see the world as it really was, that was the explanation. Neither the world nor the people he felt so sorry for. Because if you did see them for what they were, what on earth would make you want to fight and even die for them? No, if anyone could help her get her hands on the white book before the Blue Jay wrote in it and ransomed himself from death, it was Snapper. He was a man after Mortola's own heart. Snapper saw people as they really were, greedy and cowardly, full of self-interest, cunning. Only one kind of injustice had made him a robber, injustice to himself. Mortola knew all about him. One of the Laughing Prince's stewards had seized his farm, the way the powerful classes so often simply took what they wanted. That and nothing else had driven him into the forest. Yes, she could deal with Snapper. Mortola knew exactly how to harness him for her own purposes once the Black Prince was out of the way.
"What are you all still doing here, Snapper?"
she would whisper to him.
"There are more important things in life than looking after a few snotty-nosed children. The Blue Jay knows why he's really landed you with them. He's planning to sell you all. You must kill him before he throws in his lot with the Adderhead's daughter. How did he try fooling you? By saying he only wanted to write in the white book to kill the Adderhead? Nonsense. He wants to make himself immortal. And there's something else I'm sure he hasn't told you. The white book doesn't just keep death at bay. It makes its owner rich beyond the dreams of avarice."
Oh, yes. Mortola knew how Snapper's eyes would light up at those words. He didn't understand what made the Blue Jay tick. Nor would he understand that she herself wanted the book only to buy her son back from death. But he would certainly set off at once with the prospect of gold and silver before his eyes, as soon as the Black Prince couldn't stop him any more. And luckily, the berries worked fast. Gecko called to her. He had filled his hand with breadcrumbs and was holding it up as if there were nothing tastier in the world. What a fool! Thought he knew something about birds. Well, perhaps he really did. After all, she was no ordinary bird. Mortola uttered a hoarse laugh. It sounded strange coming from that pointed beak. And the strong man raised his head and looked up at the rocky ledge where she was perching. Yes, he knew about birds and what they said. She'd have to watch him carefully.
Oh, never mind. Ke-ke-ke-kra,
said the magpie in her, the magpie that thought only of worms and shiny things and the gleam of its black feathers.
They're all fools, fools, such fools. But I am clever. Come along, old woman. Let's fly after the blue jay and peck out his eyes. What fun!
Every day, it was getting more difficult to keep her wings still when the magpie wanted to spread them, and Mortola had to shake her bird's head harder and harder to make it think human thoughts. Sometimes she couldn't even remember for sure what human thoughts were like. Now the feathers would shoot out through her skin even without the seeds. She had already swallowed too many, and the poison was wandering through her body and sowing the bird in her blood. Never mind. You'll find a way to drive it out, Mortola, she thought. But first the bookbinder must be dead, and her son alive again. His face. What did it look like? She could hardly remember. The Black Prince was still arguing with Snapper, as he did so often these days.
Eat it. Start eating, you fool.
Two other robbers came along, the pockmarked actor who was always at the prince's side, and Gecko, who saw the world as Snapper did. One of the women came over to them, brought the actor a bowl of soup too, and pointed to the one she had put in front of the prince.
That's right. Listen to her. Sit down. Eat.
Mortola thrust her head forward. She felt how her human body wanted to shake off the feathers, how it longed to spread and stretch. Yesterday, a couple of children had almost caught her shape-shifting. Silly, noisy nuisances. She'd never liked children, except her own son. And she had never let even him see that she loved him. Love ruined you. It made you soft, gullible. There, he was eating. At last. Yes, enjoy it, Prince. The bear trotted up to his master and snuffled at the bowl. Get out, you clumsy great brute. Let him eat it. Four berries. Five would have been better, but with a little luck, four would do the trick. It was useful that the trees they grew on were far from rare. Two of them stood only a little way below the cave. Risa was always warning the children not to try their berries. The Black Prince put the bowl to his mouth and drank the dregs. Good. He'd soon feel death twisting his guts. Mortola uttered a triumphant croak and spread her wings. Gecko raised his hand with the breadcrumbs again as she flew away over his head. Idiot. They were all stupid. Very, very stupid. But that was just as well. The women began ladling soup out for the children, and Silvertongue's daughter stood far away at the back of the long line. There'd be enough time to pick a few berries for her, too. More than enough time. Chapter 44 The Hand of Death. Minerva made good soup. Meggie had often eaten it when she was staying with Fenolio, and the aroma rising from the steaming bowls was so delicious that for a moment the huge, chilly cave really seemed like home. "Please, Meggie, do eat something," Risa had said. "I don't have an appetite any more than you do, but it's not going to help your father if we starve to death because we're so worried about him." No, she supposed not. When she'd asked Farid to call up the fiery pictures for her again, the flames had shown nothing. "You can't force them," Farid had muttered in annoyance as he put the ashes back into his bag. "The flames like to play." So you have to pretend you don't really want anything from them. But how am I supposed to do that when you're staring at them as if it were a matter of life and death? Well, what else was it? Even the Black Prince was anxious about Mo. He had decided to follow Violante to the castle in the lake with a few men. He was going to set off tomorrow, but he wouldn't take Risa and Meggie with him. Of course not, Meggie's mother had whispered bitterly. This world belongs to men.
Meggie picked up the wooden spoon that Doria had carved for her. It was a very good spoon, and listlessly stirred the soup. Jasper peered at it longingly. Of course, glass men loved human food, although it wasn't good for them. Jasper was spending more and more time with Doria, even though Fareed was back. Meggie wasn't surprised. Fareed had been far from talkative since Dustfinger sent him away again. Most of the time, he walked restlessly in the surrounding hills, or tried to call up pictures in the fire. So far, Roxanne had looked into the flames only once. "Thank you," she had said to Fareed afterward, her voice cool. "But I'd rather go on listening to my heart. It usually tells me whether he's all right."
"There, isn't that just what I told Dustfinger?" Fareed had said, annoyed. "So why did he send me to her? She doesn't need me. She'd bewitch me away if she could."
Doria offered Jasper his spoon.
"Don't give him any," said Meggie. "He can't digest it. Ask him."
She was very fond of Jasper. He was so much friendlier than Rosenquartz, who liked nothing better than losing his temper and quarrelling with Fenolio. "She's right," muttered Jasper gloomily, but his sharp little nose sniffed, as if at least to fill his glass body with the forbidden aroma. The children sitting around Meggie giggled. They all liked the glass man, and Doria often had to rescue him from their small hands. They liked the marten, too, but Chink snapped and spat when the fuss the children made over him got to be too much. The glass man, however, had little defense against human fingers. The soup really did smell good. Meggie dipped her spoon into her bowl and jumped when the magpie that had flown to Gecko fluttered over to her own shoulder. By now the bird seemed to belong in the cave, like Jink and the bear, but Risa disliked it.
"Get away,"
she said, shooing the magpie off Meggie's shoulder. The bird croaked angrily and jabbed at Risa with its beak. Meggie was so startled that she spilled the hot soup over her hands.
"Sorry,"
Risa mopped the liquid off Meggie's fingers with the hem of her dress.
"I can't stand that bird.
I expect it's because it reminds me of Mortola."
The magpie. Of course.
It was a long time since Meggie had thought about Capricorn's mother, but then she hadn't been there when Mortola had shot Mo. Risa had.
"It's only a bird," said Meggie,
her thoughts already far away again following her father. She had found very little about the castle in the lake in Fenolio's book. Deep in the mountains, in the middle of a lake, an endless bridge over black water. Was Mo riding over that bridge now? Suppose she and Risa simply followed the Black Prince?
"Do you hear, Meggie? Whatever happens, stay with the robbers. Promise me."
Risa pointed to the bowl in her lap.
"Do please eat it, Meggie."
But Meggie turned to Roxanne, who was quickly making her way past the children as they sat there eating. Her beautiful face was paler than Meggie had seen it since Dustfinger's return. Risa stood up, looking anxious.
"What's happened?"
She took Roxanne's arm.
"Is there any news? Has anything been heard of Mo? You must tell me."
But Roxanne shook her head.
"The prince."
The anxiety in her voice was plainly audible.
"He's not well, and I don't know what it is. He has terrible stomach cramps. I have a few roots here that may help him."
She moved on, but Risa held her back again.
"Stomach cramps. Where is he?"
Meggie heard the bear's howl from far away. The strong man was looking like a desperate child as they made their way toward him. Batista was there too, with Woodenfoot and Elfbane. The Black Prince lay on the ground. Minerva was kneeling beside him, trying to get some liquid into his mouth, but he writhed in pain, pressed his hands to his body, and struggled for breath. Sweat stood out on his forehead.
"Quiet, bear,"
he gasped. He could hardly get the words past his lips. He had bitten them in his pain until they bled. But the bear went on howling and snorting as if his own life were at stake.
"Let me by."
Risa pushed them all aside, even Minerva, and took the prince's face between her hands.
"Look at me," she said. "Please, look at me."
She wiped the sweat from his brow and looked into his eyes. Roxanne came back with a few roots in her hand, and the magpie flapped its way over to Gecko's shoulder.
Risa stared at it. "Strong man," she said, so quietly that no one but Meggie heard her. "Catch that."